The opinions expressed on the Rob Report are the opinions of the host, participating callers and or listener emails, text and or letters, and are not necessarily the opinions of WDAY or Forum Communications.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Port, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you this Monday ahead of what might be the best day of this year for a couple of reasons, Ben. How you doing?
Doing good. It's going to be the best day of the year tomorrow?
Well, I think for a couple. Well, first of all, for political nerds like me, it's just exciting. It's just exciting. You know, a lot's happening. I mean, and also, for as cynical as we are about politics, this is the means by which we govern. By going to the ballot box, we are ensuring that our country does not determine its next leader through, like, war or murder or, you know, widespread. You know what I mean? Like,
it shows the system works.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the system working. And mm-hmm. and I think that's worth celebrating. Also, it means the election's over. So some of the
true.
You know, and I shouldn't complain. I make my living with this stuff, but I think everybody gets a little tired of the ads at this point. It's like,
amen.
We've heard the arguments. There's really nothing new out there. Let's make a decision already. Right. And we're going to do that tomorrow. Although tens of thousands. In fact, it looks like early voting in North Dakota is setting records. As a matter of fact, it even sounds like turnout for all the hoopla we've heard about voter suppression on North Dakota. Right. Those evil racist Republicans and their desire that people show an ID with a current residential address on it at the polls. Those evil jerks have suppressed the Native American vote so badly, it looks like the Native American vote is going to set a record in 2018, which I guess just tells me apparently North Dakota Republicans are really, really bad at being racist. Like, they're not that good at it. Like, if that was the intent, like, the whole thing was, well, we're going to suppress the Native American vote. And then within a few weeks, some activists were able to descend on the state, and everybody who got IDs, you know, needed IDs, got IDs, and now voter turnout in the Native American reservation is going to be. It almost makes it seem like the voter ID law is actually, like, super easy to comply with. It isn't really that big of a deal to begin with. I don't know. Call me crazy, but I feel like maybe the Sturm und Drang about the voter ID law was politics more than reality. Anyway, hey, we got a busy show coming up. Congressman Kevin Cramer joins. It's going to be the last time he's out. I thought last week was going to be the last time, but he's doing kind of a talk radio tour on all the different shows. So he's going to be on at 12:30. Just, I guess, his last thoughts from the campaign trail. You can certainly call in 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Invited Senator Heitkamp on the show, as I do every week as well. Didn't hear back from them. But, you know, Congressman Cramer will be on the show at 12:30. Eric Trump is going to be on the program at 1 o'clock. That's right, son of President Trump. Eric Trump is going to be on the program.
He's back.
Talk about the midterms a little bit.
He was on earlier in the summer, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Eric Trump on. Yeah, we had Laura Trump on. Yeah, we had a couple of members of the Trump family on the show. So, yeah, Eric Trump at 1 o'clock. And then coming up at 1:30, North Dakota House candidate Kelly Armstrong is going to be on the program, along with Tom Emmer, who is the Republican candidate in Minnesota's 6th congressional district. North Dakota, of course, at large. We only have the one congressional district. So we don't even give it a number. We just call it an at-large district. Because North Dakota has the population of, like, a large city in another state. But that's all right. We like it that way. They're going to be on the program at 1:30. Plus, you can call in 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Let's see. Over the weekend, you know what I did? I actually started it. Started binge-watching. I binge-watched House of Cards, the new House of Cards season.
Is it any good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the same.
No. Well, it's not even. I kind of feel like the series jumped the shark a couple seasons ago already.
Mm-hmm.
Losing Kevin Spacey, and I don't disagree with the reason why he's not on the show anymore at all. I'm not being critical, but I mean, as awful a human being as apparently he turned out to be in his private life, the dude was a heck of an actor,
right?
And I feel like the last couple of seasons, like his charisma. His just sort of monstrous portrayal of Frank Underwood was kind of carrying the show. And once we lost that, it's like there wasn't even really anything left.
It's kind of like, why bother even having another season?
Right. I mean, I feel like they would have been better off canceling it, I think.
Yeah.
They would have been better off canceling House of Cards than doing that. Because I don't feel like it, I don't think, it didn't reveal anything new, which maybe isn't surprising for a final season, mm-hmm. right? I mean, do you really want to
wrap things up?
Right. But they didn't do that either. They really didn't wrap anything up. Like, you ended the season, and it's just like nothing. There's nothing new. There's nothing resolved. What was the point?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Watch it. I mean, if you've been following the show, like, I felt like I was sort of trapped. Like, the last couple of seasons with House of Cards, you feel like you're trapped. Like, you start reading a bad book.
Stockholm Syndrome just with TV shows is a real thing.
Why am I still reading this? Right. Or why am I still watching this? But you feel like you got to finish it.
Right. That's how I am with Doctor Who. I can't stop.
Yeah. You just feel obligated. Like, like at this point in my life, I grew up reading Stephen King, right?
Right.
I love Stephen King. I will always love it. I have wonderful childhood memories of reading Stephen King books when I was a kid. At this point, I'm still going to read everything he writes.
What did you think of Castle Rock?
That was pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I mean, it wasn't bad. Yeah, I mean, it was good. I wonder how much of it was just really built around all of us, like, looking for the allusions to the book, the character names and
names. I remember that one. I remember this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like that was really a niche audience, although it's hard to call Stephen King's audience a niche audience. It's so huge.
He's got pretty wide appeal, I think.
But I didn't feel like it was I felt hard seeing it as a story in and of itself.
Fair.
But anyway, yeah, I have Stockholm Syndrome with Stephen King. He could probably publish his laundry list, and I'd buy it and read it.
That's dedication.
I'd be like, oh, milk? Yeah. Okay, let's see. What else is going on? Oh, we've got Dirty Tricks right up to the bell. You know, it's sort of interesting. Ryan Rauschenberger, who there haven't been many polls in the tax commissioner race, but the few that has shown him with a heavy lead over challenger Kylie Overson. Now, she's taken an interesting tact. A lot of times, if you see somebody who has struggled with something like, in politics, in North Dakota anyway, if you see somebody who has struggled with something like alcohol personally, the other side will take kind of a kid's gloves approach to it, right? I mean, they'll bring it up. It's relevant. I mean, even when we've had Rauschenberger on this program, and I've asked him about it, even he acknowledges it's relevant.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth asking about. But I think there is a point at which you could be mean. Now, I don't know how many people have seen these ads, but Democratic challenger Kylie Overson, she used to be chair of the party, but she stepped down from that role earlier this year, so she's just the tax commissioner candidate at this point. Former state lawmaker from Grand Forks, lost election in 2016. She is running ads, and these ads are rough. Have you seen these at all, Ben?
No, I haven't.
Okay. If you haven't seen them, I have the two in question. She has other ones, but the two in question up at sayanythingblog.com if you want to take a look at them. One includes actual footage, like the actual dash cam footage of Rauschenberger getting arrested for DUI. The other one, and this one, I think, which I mean, to me, the dash cam footage, all right, you know, it happened. He's a statewide office holder. He got arrested. We all know it exists.
Right.
That one, I'm not even so sure I have how much of a problem I have. I mean, it's rough. She's going right at it, but also he got arrested for DUI. That's just a fact. I don't necessarily have a problem with it. The one I think is a little tackier. She has like an actor get into this van, and it's got a big Rauschenberger logo on it. And then the van proceeds to like careen down the road, like swerving all over the place. They have it drive in front of a school, and like kids are looking on. And I feel like that's just too far. You know, I feel like in a state where attitudes are shifting, I mean, first of all, North Dakota is a state, we drink a lot to begin with. And I think there's a lot of people in North Dakota who probably know somebody, or maybe they themselves have had a problem with alcohol or have tripped up and gotten themselves a DUI. I'm not defending it, not condoning it, not saying it's a good thing.
But it happens.
But it happens. Yeah. And I don't know that sanctimony about a DUI as a political message is all that winning. And again, I don't have a problem with her bringing it up. I mean, if you have a statewide elected official who got arrested for anything, that's fair game. But to bring it up that way, but here's the capper, right? So we have these ads and oh, you know, Ryan Reagan is a terrible person, on and on and on. Well, here's the thing. Overstreet's also been sending out mailers, which he's been campaigning alongside Secretary of State candidate Josh Boucher. Josh Boucher, who has three alcohol-related charges on his criminal record. He has a 2006 to 2010 misdemeanor reckless driving charges for which he had to take what do they call it? Like the sobriety evaluation or whatever, chemical dependency evaluations. Like they were drunk driving. It's in North Dakota, especially in years past, if you got it, you could plead a DUI down to like a reckless driving charge. And it sounds like that's what happened here. So he has two misdemeanor alcohol-related reckless driving charges, and then a conviction for selling, possessing, consuming alcohol in public. So he's got these three charges. Now, to Boucher's credit, he, like Rauschenberger, has been open about this. He's spoken about them. He's acknowledged it's fair game. They're on the record. These are things that he did. He owns it, right? To yep. Josh Boucher's great. Credit. I've asked him about it. He's owned it. That's great. But here's the thing for Kylie Overson. If you're going to run these ads and judge Ryan Rauschenberger, he's this terrible person, right? You're going to have an actor drive around in a van, swerving around like that's Ryan Rauschenberger. In front of kids, you're going to do that, but then you're going to campaign with a fellow Democrat who also drove drunk? Doesn't that make you, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a hypocrite?
Maybe just a tiny bit.
Right? I mean, if you're going to say Ryan Rauschenberger is not fit to hold the tax commissioner's office because he got a DUI and he's had struggles with alcohol addiction, then how could you campaign with somebody you say is fit to hold the Secretary of State's office despite having three alcohol-related offenses on his record? Now, I say that I like Josh. I don't hold those offenses. When I made up my mind not to vote for Josh Boucher, those alcohol offenses, to me, were irrelevant. I don't think Josh Boucher is a drinking problem. I think if he was elected, you know, anything that might be impacted by alcohol consumption, I don't think that's even an issue for him. My problem with Josh Boucher or policy. But, you know, again, Overson's out there saying, well, the problem with Ryan Rauschenberger, oh, he's a drunk. He got a DUI. Okay, so did the guy you're campaigning with, Kylie. I got the mailer. A reader of the blog emailed me a picture of the mailer. And this is what this person told me. And this person's a Democrat, by the way. So as I quote, as Kylie rails on Rauschenberger for getting a DUI, she sidles up with Boucher, who has had three alcohol-related offenses on his record. Talk about talking out of both sides of her mouth. Yeah, exactly. I agree. What do you think? Love to hear from you. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. I want a girl who knows what's best. You know what question everybody keeps asking me, Ben?
What question?
Like yesterday. I mean, because my friends, family, and then obviously the listeners to this show, the people who read my columns and the blog and everything. Everybody's at, you know, what do you think the election's going to turn out to be? You know, who's going to win? What's going to win on the ballot? I think that's what we're going to do on tomorrow's show, right? I mean, tomorrow's election day. We'll just go through and do everybody's predictions.
Okay.
Right? I think we'll do that. You know, we'll talk about, you know, how you feel all the different races are going to go. But everybody's asking me. And I mean, it's fun to talk about. I don't know. I'll tell you right now, because the one everybody keeps asking me about is obviously the Senate race. Right, that's the top
big one.
Top race here in North Dakota. And I'll tell you, as a matter of fact, I've had national media people emailing me like, well, you know, how do you feel about things? I will tell you, I guess I'll get a little early talking about how I think things are going to go. And by the way, Congressman Kevin Cramer is going to join us here at 12:30. If I had to lay a bet down, I'd say Cramer's going to win. Right? I mean, if you're saying, Rob, you have to put some money down on this race – and you have to pick one of the candidates and you can't abstain, I would put money on Kevin Cramer. I think Cramer's going to win. That being said, I think it's far from a sure thing. Senator Heitkamp has spent an enormous amount of money. We don't have any, we don't really have any polling since, I think, October 22nd, maybe, is the last date for which we have polling.
Well, and she had an upset when she first won. So
right,
yeah.
I mean, she pulled it. Now, I don't think a lot of people point to that, and that's fair. I mean, you're right in that Heitkamp finishes strong. She does. She knows how to finish out a race the right way, and that's good on her. 2018 is not 2012 for a lot of reasons. I think Kevin Kramer's run a much better campaign than Rick Berg. Down the stretch, it was Berg. Berg was – Heitkamp sort of in the position that Berg was in 2012. Remember, Berg was – he did not handle – Senator Heitkamp's brother was on the radio calling Rick Berg a slumlord and everything else. And Berg did not handle that well, right, with his – you know, because he was a part of Goldmark, the rental property giant. And it did not – he did not handle that situation well. So it went – coming down the stretch, although he'd been leading in the polls, Berg was kind of on the ropes. I feel like it's sort of the opposite with Heitkamp. I mean, coming down the stretch, she's been the one. Her campaign has been the one that has goofed a number of times. I'm talking about the outing the sexual assault survivors. I'm talking about running that Facebook ad, although it was the North Dakota Democratic Party which ran it. A, that's Heidi's party. B, she basically endorsed the ad when asked about it. So you have an ad out there with Senator Heitkamp's blessing telling hunters not to vote. You know, if there were people who were still on the fence, right? I mean, because that's what – if Senator Heitkamp's leading in the polls, and again, we've had one poll after another since February showing Senator Heitkamp losing. So what she's got to do is she's got to get the undecideds to come down on her side. And then maybe she's even got to convince some of the people who had made up their minds for Kramer to maybe change their minds. That was her task coming down the stretch. Do you think running an ad telling hunters not to hunt in North Dakota, or not? I'm perpetrating a little bit of fake news there. The ad didn't tell hunters not to hunt. The ad said hunters might want to consider not voting, lest they put their hunting licenses in other states in jeopardy. Which turned out to
be much better.
Yeah, well, it turned out to be total bunk. Yeah. PolitiFact gave her a pants on fire rating for it. The Associated Press fact checked it as well. Completely false. It's not true. But that was the end. And widely, a lot of people saw that. That's problems for her. So you look at 2012, Senator Heitkamp ran a pitch perfect campaign in 2012. She was spot on. Everything went right. 2018 has been a different matter. She has a better challenger, frankly. Kevin Kramer's a tougher opponent. Kevin Kramer, by the way, when Rick Berg ran for the Senate, he was just completing his first term in the United States House. Kramer has already been elected to the House multiple times. So I don't think it's 2012 all over again. That said, and I realize I just ran down a litany of reasons why Senator Heitkamp, I think, is probably going to lose. I will tell you, I still think she can win. And the reason why is you look at I feel like the voter ID issue has been an effective one for her, although I think a lot of it's based on baloney. As a practical matter, and I think it has invigorated her base. I think her vote against Brett Kavanaugh has invigorated her left-wing base. If Kevin Kramer gets buried in the Red River Valley, he's going to have a tough time making it up in the rest of the state. You know, you can't win just by winning the Red River Valley, but you can put yourself in a pretty good position by doing so. If Kevin Kramer can keep it close in the Valley, he wins. If he gets buried in the Valley, well, then it's a jump ball, I think. But I don't know. I wrote a column weeks ago saying Heidi Heitkamp is not out of this. I still don't think she's out of it today. But we'll see. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Kevin Kramer himself joins us here at 1230. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDY.com. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're at Port 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDY.com. Joining me now, Congressman Kevin Kramer, who, of course, if you haven't heard, is running for Senate. And actually, Kevin, I saw you voted earlier today. Who'd you vote for in the Senate race?
I did vote for myself. It may seem arrogant, but I guess if you think that you're going to make the case to everybody else, you should make the case to yourself.
I hope you voted for yourself. Yeah, I mean, right, all the million, right? All the ads and everything, for crying out loud.
Of course, sometimes I wonder if you watch all the ads. You know, I think if I watch the ads myself as much as other people do, I might wonder about myself.
You'll write somebody, write in Chris, maybe. I don't know.
Well, anyway, I did vote. Chris and I voted, and it's funny. We didn't really have any reason to vote early other than our day tomorrow was more full than our day today. So we thought we'd better get it done with before you know, before we end up in a time crunch tomorrow. And as it turns out, my goodness, the early voting is so robust. It's almost like showing up on Election Day.
Do you feel like, I know the campaigns put a lot of research into turnout and everything. I mean, do you feel like, I feel like this is going to be a high turnout year.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the early voting, to me, I think we're going to find the bulk of that's just a change in behavior. Just people deciding to vote earlier instead of on Election Day.
I completely agree, Rob. I do think convenience, you know, perhaps creates more voting to some degree. But I think by and large, it's just a change of behavior. I think that's exactly right. We've made it so convenient to either vote by mail or vote early. Obviously, absentee ballots have always been out there. But I think you're right. I think by and large, it just allows people more convenience to vote when it's better for them rather than, you know, creating a lot of new voters.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I still like to go on Election Day. I like to go in on Election Day. I like to hear what people are saying in the line. I don't know. Call me old-fashioned, I guess.
Bob. You are old-fashioned
yeah,
in some ways. But
a little
bit. In some ways, you're not at all. But, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. It was a little bit weird for me, actually, to do it today. But, like I said, it really came down to a very basic reasoning, and that's just our own calendar. So we're grateful to have that convenience. Sure. And then when you look at the long line, I'm thinking, well, I wonder what the lines are going to be like tomorrow. But I do think you're right. It will be a big turnout. I do think the early voting, large numbers are an indication that it's just a big turnout year, not that, you know, not that it's only early voting either, but I think it's going to be a big turnout year. And why wouldn't it be? It's a big election, even though it's not a presidential one.
We've heard a lot about, you know, supposed voter suppression because of our voter ID laws, and supposedly it was going to disenfranchise the Native American vote. I'll tell you, I mean, by all the reports I'm seeing, and in fact, I had North Dakota Indian Affairs Commissioner Scott Davis on the program last week, and he predicted this as well. Looks like we're headed to a record turnout from our tribal communities, which is great, by the way. But yes. I think maybe sort of flies in the face of this. I mean, if Republicans are racist voter suppressors, they've got to be the worst racist voter suppressors I've ever seen in my life. They didn't get the job done if that was what they were trying to do, which they weren't, obviously.
No, that, for sure. I think you're right. I would say this. Fortunately, there was adequate time between the decision by the Supreme Court and election for the tribes to, you know, to come up with some sort of a plan to make sure that their members had adequate your IDs and whatnot to be able to vote. But I think you're exactly right. If the goal was suppression, they failed miserably. But I don't think that ever was the goal. I never sensed that anyway by the state legislature. I just think it was a matter of integrity, and why not? You know, our votes count a lot more if they're done right than if you have to sort of question whether they were legitimate or not. And it's not like it's overly burdensome to get an identification. So I thought it was fine. Although I do think it's time to have a long discussion about whether we should have voter registration in North Dakota.
Well, I agree. I hate to go down that road, but at some point I feel like it's inevitable. I got some questions via email, so people want to ask you. They sure think it's one of our town hall, which, fine, I'm sure you're up for it. Let's see. Corey emails. He goes, I'm looking for a little explanation for Heidi's ad with the beans laying on the ground, and she's pretty much blaming Kramer for it and wants us to vote Heidi so it won't happen again. But she is obviously the one that has been in office, so how is she going to fix the problem if we vote for her? Not that I'm voting for her. And I think that Castleton bean pile, I think, is kind of the folks at Maple River Grain, put out a Facebook post where they kind of seem to be pushing back, saying, listen, our bean pile was the same size as it was last year. So I think blaming the size of that specific pile on Trump's trade policies is a little facetious. But even the New York Times is using a picture of that ad. But in response to the emailer, what are your thoughts?
Sure. Well, a couple things. First of all, you're right. The company did push back. In fact, they said it's the same size, if not a little smaller. They also said, by the way, those beans are sold. So she called them unsold beans. The fact is they are sold beans, and that the train to pick them up will be there if it's not there already, and that the pile will be gone by Thanksgiving, which is all part of the normal cycle of soybeans and other crops. There's been a, I don't think we can kid anybody. It's been a challenge. There's been a low commodity price, bean price, as a result of, the trade dispute with China. China has been buying a lot of their beans from Brazil, but that's opened up other markets for U.S. beans. And the $1.65 per bushel that the Trump administration is providing through the trade mitigation plan makes up for the price loss as a result of the trade war. The big challenge is whether or not these beans can get to market. And obviously the beans in Castleton are going to market because they're already sold and the train is either there or on the way. And it's been, to say the least, more than a slight exaggeration of Senator Heitkamp's. And that's been the case all along. Of course, she has that tendency anyway. Every time she talks, she has this tendency to make whatever the issue at the moment is the biggest issue in the history of the world, which is why she said in the debate that she has no higher priority on behalf of the people of North Dakota in the United States Senate than the United States Post Office, which I've done a lot of polling. I've never seen the U.S. Post Office make the top of the list of the most concerning.
I'm not going to say it's unimportant. I just don't know that it's right. The most important.
Right.
I mean, obviously, Postal Service very important for a lot of people. It seems like an odd choice for priority.
Yeah.
I got another email says, take away all the ads and all the debates and back and forth. Mm-hmm. What sets you apart from Heidi? For those of us still on the fence, what's your message?
Yeah. So if you to take away all the ads, I'd go to just a handful of issues. And one is open borders. She supports open borders, supports funding sanctuary cities. I support a more secure border and not funding sanctuary cities. I do not support late-term abortions or federal funding for late-term abortions. She does support late-term abortions and federal funding. I support tax cuts. She supports tax increases. I support a strong military. She supports a much weaker military. But, you know, Rob, even the issues aside, I think one of the things that really sets her and me apart, one from the other, is that we've been serving the exact same number of days in the exact same Congress because we were elected by the very same people on the same day. And I come on your radio show and a multitude of others. I do town halls. I really do make myself available because I, by the way, enjoy it. And I think it helps me be a better congressman to make myself available to the voters of North Dakota in an unedited, unfiltered way. And she does not. And she's, I think, reaping the consequences of that absence for the last 6 years, in these recent weeks where she's been trying to make up for it all in a matter of weeks rather than doing what I think North Dakotans have come to expect, at least from me, and that is to be very accessible and very available.
Well, I think there's been a lot of that this cycle, not just obviously on her accessibility. And, you know, people say, well, of course you're going to go on Rob Port's show. He's conservative and you're conservative, and that's going to be a – and fair enough. I wear my biases on my sleeve. Everybody knows where I'm at, and that's mm-hmm. that's fine. You go on her brother's radio show, too, and you go on other left-of-center shows that are not inclined they're inclined to be critical of you. We'll put it that way.
Right.
But it's not just that issue where all of a sudden it's an election year. Now Senator Heitkamp wants to be accessible. It's also – I look at the voter ID issue. That law, we've been talking about that law since the 2013 session. The latest iteration of the law was passed during the 2017 legislative session. And yet we didn't hear a peep about it, really, from Senator Heitkamp. Certainly not, the war drum beating that we've been hearing from the press and Senator Heitkamp supporters over the last, several weeks now. We didn't hear any of that until it was an election year. Until it became a useful I feel like there's been a lot of issues like that with Senator Heitkamp where all of a sudden she's out engaged and she's talking out, she's fighting when it's an election year, right?
Well,
if you cared about it, then talk about it when it happened.
I love that example because it's rich in its irony that she wasn't concerned about it, nor were a lot of other people concerned about it at the time the legislature was dealing with it. But when it became a convenient political tool to take voter suppression and use it as a voter, as a voter enthusiasm tool. It's much like her being, quote, bipartisan. She's taken bipartisanship and used it as a partisan weapon. It's just very intriguing. She's never been interested in saving Social Security before, but now all of a sudden she wants to talk about me cutting Social Security, which I've never said I would do or advocated for. I just think, Rob, she's reaping the consequences of not being engaged for 6 years, and now all of a sudden her engagement's gotten her in a lot of trouble, which is why today she's got a different story about the voter suppression ad that her party ran that she had a great explanation for the other day regarding hunters losing their hunting privileges if they vote, and the full-page ad that outed women victims of sexual abuse. All of a sudden she's got all of these missteps, and I think it's because she hasn't been engaged for a long time. She's not really in touch.
At least she apologized for the sexual assault ad. She didn't apologize.
Right.
The Hunter ad, she defended. She had said, well, we got to make sure people understand the consequences of voting, which I've never heard. That's a term I have never heard come out of a politician's mouth. Well, we got to make sure people understand what the consequences are for voting, right? Like, why
right. Well, the consequences of not voting are she could become a senator again.
Yeah. Well, here's let me ask you this. Obviously, the race is not over yet. Election day is tomorrow. Lots of people have voted. Lots of people still to vote. I still very much believe Senator Heitkamp can win this race. She's brought a ton of money into the state. She finishes strong. If I had to lay a bet down, as I said in the previous segment, Kevin, I'd place my bet down on you winning. But I think Senator Heitkamp can absolutely still finish this strong and win. That said, I feel like there was a turning point in this race. I think there was a turning point in this race where it had been one thing and then it became something else. And I think that was her vote against Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. And I feel like up to then, Senator Heitkamp was trying to portray herself as a moderate, independent, look at how often I vote with Donald Trump. Look, I've got Trump supporters in my TV ads. All of a sudden, she votes against she votes against Brett Kavanaugh. She sees a tidal wave of out-of-state money into her campaign. All of a sudden, the voter ID issue, you got left-wing groups and you have celebrity activists parachuting into the state about the voter suppression thing. All of that just all of a sudden happened. And I feel like that was the point at which she decided which path she was going to take. Was she going to play the moderate thing until Election Day, or was she going to pander to her base down the stretch? To me, it looks like she obviously chose to pander to her base. Do you see it that way as well?
Well, I think the turning point was much sooner than that, to be honest with you. But I do think the latter part of your point is right. She decided she'd have to pander to the base because they weren't very enthused about voting for her based on, you know, her other rhetoric. The problem was her other rhetoric really wasn't winning her anything even in the middle. Because you might recall, if you look at a private poll or public polling, and I have access to both public and private, and her own behavior, you know, she was already well behind prior to the Kavanaugh vote. And I think it was at that point she had to decide, yes, which path am I going to take? Which one provides me either the best opportunity or the least consequence or negative consequence? And you're right. She flushed her entire campaign theme and her entire brand that she was trying to build in one vote, and that was voting against Brett Kavanaugh. And I have no less than half a dozen instances today I've heard from people saying that they decided to vote for me after she cast that vote. And not only cast the vote, but it made her complicit in the entire, the entire debacle, which was, you know, Cory Booker. I mean, my gosh, he brought Cory Booker to North Dakota after, you know, he led this crazy left-wing charge against Brett Kavanaugh. And I think when people saw that behavior, including lots of Democrats I've talked to, when they saw that behavior, they knew then and there for sure that there was that the National Democratic Party had long ago abandoned Middle America.
Last question. Mike asks, he says, ask Kramer if he's concerned about more young people coming out to vote on Measure 3. They, as we all know, go D. I've heard a lot of people say this about Measure 3, that it's going to bring a lot of Democratic voters to the polls. I don't think that's true, Kevin. And I say that as a Republican who supports Measure 3. I know you don't support Measure 3, but I can tell you, there's a lot of Republicans out there that support legalizing recreational marijuana. I would not count on the Measure 3 vote being overwhelmingly Democratic.
I would totally agree with you on that because, you know, legalization of marijuana has, at the one hand, Republicans may question sort of the law and order side of that, but it has as its foundation liberty. And there's no question that Republicans are more liberty-oriented than our Democrats. However, while I am an opponent of Measure 3, I am also an opponent of continuing to keep marijuana as a Schedule 1, on Schedule 1 of our federal code. I think we've got to, at the federal level, deal with this issue in a way that's more reflective of not just our culture, but of the realities of marijuana in the, you know, in the scheme of all illegal activity and illegal drugs. So, and by the way, I'll tell you, Rob, this I will reveal in terms of my private polling. My strongest demographic group are 18 to 34-year-olds. So I'm happy to have more young people vote, regardless of how they're voting on Measure 3. By the way, I've always been an advocate of 100% voter turnout. So I think everybody ought to vote. I think self-governance works better when people exercise it.
Yeah, well, I'd like people to be informed on the issues first, and then that's always my caveat. That's my caveat, Kevin, as I'm sure you've seen. Well, thanks for your time. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks, Rob. Bye-bye.
That's Congressman Kevin Cramer. This is the Rob Report. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. Went a little long with Cramer there, so not a lot of time here. Emailer says, talking about Kylie Overson campaigning for tax commissioner, says, what gets me is how Overson spews out like the tax commissioner has some sort of benevolent power to change how much I pay in property taxes. Yeah, that's the problem. Honestly, that sort of thing is why I don't even think we should elect the tax commissioner, Ben. I don't think we should elect the tax commissioner.
You think they should be chosen?
Yeah, I think they should be appointed by the governor. They don't set policy. They're administrators. They don't have any kind the tax commissioner has no control over tax policy. The insurance commissioner has no control over insurance. That's set by the legislature. All they do is administrate the law. They ought to be appointed, not elected. Anyway, that's my thought. Hey, we got to take another break. We'll be back hour two. Eric Trump coming up next here on the Rob Report. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. 1-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Joining me now is Eric Trump, son of President Donald Trump. Eric, how are you?
Hey, Rob. It's great to be on.
Good to have you on. We have a bit of a barn burner of a Senate race here in North Dakota. How do you see things going?
Listen, I think you do. I think you do. And, you know, if Republicans get out, I think we're going to be in good shape. I mean, you know, Rob, you know this better than anybody, but as a country, we're winning again. I mean, we're winning on everything we do. We've got the fastest growing economy that we've ever had. We have 4.2% GDP growth, which is amazing. We've got 3.7% unemployment, the lowest unemployment since 1969. In fact, since 1969, we've only had 11 months where unemployment's been under 4%. And Trump has had six of them, meaning under a Trump administration, there's been, you know, six of them. And, you know, manufacturing is coming back to our country. 401ks are up by 35%. Consumer confidence is at an all-time high. I mean, America is doing unbelievably well, and we have to keep it going. I mean, we have to vote for Republicans. We have to get it, keep it going. Obviously, you have, somebody in North Dakota that voted against tax cuts, like all Democrats did, and they voted against Judge Kavanaugh, and you see all the accusations come out, you know, yesterday that so many of them were made up, and the people are now under investigation, and we can't allow this stuff to continue to happen. I mean, people have to go out to the polls. People have to vote.
Well, Senator Heitkamp, I mean, she voted against Brett Kavanaugh. So, I mean, we just had Congressman Cramer on the show. We talked about how that was sort of a changing spot, a turning point in the election. But let me ask you this, though. Throughout most of her campaign, Senator Heitkamp has talked about how cooperative she's been with your father. She's ran ads saying that she votes with him most of the time. She's run ads with people describing themselves as Trump voters, saying they support Senator Heitkamp. In fact, at one point in this election, when your father was signing into law some banking deregulation, Senator Heitkamp was bragging that she got to stand closer to the president than Congressman Cramer did. So, I mean, that's been her message for a lot of this campaign is, listen, I'm every bit as capable of being an ally to President Trump and his agenda as Kevin Cramer is.
Yeah, of course, Rob, because, you know, my father won North Dakota by 36%, but she voted against the largest tax cuts this country has ever seen, right? The reason we have 4.2% GDP growth and 3.7% unemployment, she voted against tax cuts with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. She voted alongside President Obama 88% of the time. That's just fact. It is what it is. She voted against Kavanaugh, so she can go back and say that, you know, she's with him and she's with Trump and try and be a moderate because he won the state by a large margin, but she's not, and she hasn't helped out. And, you know, my father wants to do tax cuts 2.0. He wants to reduce taxes for Americans another 10%. She won't vote for that because Chuck Schumer won't allow anybody to vote for that, and, you know, Nancy Pelosi will come out 100% against that. And, you know, we need real leadership. I mean, we need real leadership, not just doing something in Washington and, you know, telling everybody in your state when you get home that you did something else. She voted with Obama 88% of the time. She votes with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. She votes against all the big things that my father wants to do. And, you know, listen, we're winning again. America's winning. We're winning on the economy. We're winning on tax cuts. We're winning on law enforcement. We're winning on ISIS. We're winning on, you know, the military and our veterans and rebuilding our great military. We're winning on prescription drugs and the opioid crisis and prison reform and, you know, 401ks and manufacturing and everything else. And we've got to keep winning. I mean, this country is doing amazingly well. But if Nancy Pelosi's in there, it's going to be turmoil. I mean, it's going to be, resist, obstruct, higher taxes, attacks on law enforcement, and we can't have it, Rob. I mean, we can't have it.
Let me ask you this question. I think you're right. Obviously, North Dakota did vote overwhelmingly for President Trump in 2016. I think North Dakota also overwhelmingly supports President Trump's policy agenda. But one thing that Democrats have consistently pointed out this election cycle is that the trade policy, specifically trade tariffs against Canada, or excuse me, against China, have created some tough sledding for our agriculture community. And down the stretch, in fact, in the New York Times today, we have an article about piles of soybeans being left on the ground, and people are worried, are they going to get sold, or are they going to rot there? That was the thesis of the New York Times article. Now, I think some of that's exaggerated. In fact, the article that they use is from a grain elevator here in North Dakota that says the pile of soybeans that they're showing isn't any larger than the pile of soybeans they had last year. But still, I think it's fair to say soybean growers have been hurt a little bit in the short run. What would you say to those voters? Maybe people who voted for President Trump in 2016 who are saying, hey, wait a minute, these trade policies are hurting me as I'm getting out there trying to sell my crops.
Sure. Now, it's a great point. By the way, because I'm a business guy, it's one of the things I study probably closest, of all. We were getting ripped off. We were getting ripped off by the entire world. Between 2001 and 2016, this country lost 70,000 factories. We lost 70,000 factories. It was really three-part. First part is that we overtaxed our companies so they could no longer be competitive. Second part was we overregulated our companies so they could no longer be competitive. And the third part, we allowed China to impose sanctions of 20-25% on the United States, and we didn't impose any sanctions on them. We didn't impose any tariffs on them. And so what happened is America would make the same widget as China would make, and we would try and send it over to China. They wouldn't accept it, and if they did, American companies would pay 25%, on that product to go into China, and they would take their product, they would dump it in America. And that's why we lost 70,000 factories between, 2001 and 2016. Our manufacturing was lost. Our jobs were lost. They all went overseas. Plants popped up in Mexico, plants popped up in China. I saw these deserted places everywhere I've gone, in this country. Right now, Rob, if you look at China, China's down 25% this year. All right, now we just signed a new agreement with them, but the Chinese currency is down by 13%. Right, America is at all time highs in terms of its economy. So who's winning this trade war, America or China? America is, and it's not even close. Are there industries that might feel some temporary pain? 100%. It's not perfect. My father doesn't want to impose tariffs on anybody, but they've been ripping us off for so long, and you have to stand up for them. Otherwise, we had an $800 billion trade imbalance with the rest of the world, $570 billion going over to China, and it can't continue to happen. It can't continue to happen. I mean, they were bankrupting our country.
701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. Millions of people across the country, tens of thousands of people here in North Dakota have already voted. But voting ends, I guess you could say, tomorrow.
Sure.
Obviously. What do you think, as people go to the polls, those people who are still undecided, who are still just, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, your father's not on the ballot this cycle. He's made it clear who he would like people to vote for, but he's not on the ballot. People here in North Dakota saying, I don't know between Kevin Cramer, Heidi Heitkamp. On the House side, I don't know between Max Schneider and Kelly Armstrong. What's your message to those people?
Listen, the message is if Democrats take control, it's going to be Nancy Pelosi and it's going to be Chuck Schumer. And all they want to do is obstruct, resist, raise taxes, and fight and create total anarchy. The other thing I'd say is, go check your 401k, go check your savings account. Did you get a raise this year? That's because our economy is doing phenomenal. I mean, people's 401ks in this country are up by 35% since Election Day. This year was the first year that wages have gone up in the United States in 16 years, 3.1% wage growth in this nation. I mean, everywhere you look, right? We have 7.2 million jobs available for the American workforce. We have more open jobs in America right now than we have people to fill those jobs. And, that's why wages are obviously increasing as rapidly as they are. America's winning. We are winning at everything we do right now. Our economy is winning. Our nation is winning. Our military is winning. Our veterans are winning. I mean, we are winning. And Nancy Pelosi, you know, and Chuck Schumer, they will resist everything. They will stop. They will obstruct. Nancy Pelosi was on CNN this weekend saying, I'm just going to subpoena everybody. I'm going to subpoena everybody under the sun. And, you know, I mean, they will literally stop all forward progress of this country. And we're doing too well, Rob. I mean, we're doing too well as a nation. People have to get out there. They have to vote. And they have to vote Republican because, you know, it's not even about high camp. It's not even about, you know, it's about once they're in there, they will just form a wall and they will stop all forward progress. And that's why people need to go out. And, you know, Kevin Cramer is great. And people have to vote. People have to vote Republican.
We got about 60 seconds left with Eric Trump. Caller John's got a question. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Donald. So, quick question for you. If we manage to hold a Republican majority across the board, could you whisper in your dad's ear to give us gun owners our national reciprocity and maybe some of our rights back?
So by the way, I'm the Second Amendment guy. I'm the biggest Second Amendment guy there is. I'm an active shooter. I do a lot of, you know, competitive shooting. It is my thing. It's my issue. It's an issue I care. I care so much about. In fact, I'd love to come out there and go shooting with you guys anytime. But, you know, believe me, it's something that's top of mind. My father will fight to protect the Second Amendment. He's done that by putting two incredible Supreme Court justices on who are fully behind the Second Amendment. My father was the earliest person to ever be endorsed by the NRA, even before he won the primaries. Believe me, we will protect gun rights. I will do everything humanly possible to fight for gun rights because it's such a big part of my life. It's such a big part of my upbringing. Please don't worry about that. Do not worry about that under the Trump administration. I'm telling you, we will fight every day for our Second Amendment because it's something that I cherish and Don cherishes and my father cherishes. You know, we are 100% there with you. And national right to carry,
Eric,
by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Eric Trump. This is the Rob Report. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Don't go away. I don't know what's left to say. I'll say it anyway. Welcome back to Rob Report, 970 WDAY, AM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. I like calling this time of election season the silly season. I was just reading an article where Chelsea Handler, do you know who that is?
Some kind of comedian, show host?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, comedian or actress.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not real familiar with her body of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the headline, though. Chelsea Handler goes nude to urge America to vote like your life depends on it. Comedian and left-wing activist Chelsea Handler stripped nude to promote voting in Tuesday's midterm elections in a new video she posted on social media. You have to vote like your life depends on it. Vote, Chelsea Handler said in an Instagram story where she appeared naked. I feel like if you have to take off your clothes to get people to pay attention to your political message, either nobody cares, right? I mean, what... I don't even get that. Like, what? It just seems like exhibitionism now.
Like, there's been a lot of crazy stuff, like trying to get people out to vote, and it's good that, you know, people want other people to vote. But like, why go naked? Why?
Yeah. Well, I think there's two explanations. Either she doesn't think she can get any attention, like she's got to do something over the top to get people to pay attention to her, right? And if that's the case, you know. Is that why you want people paying attention to you? Because you took your clothes off and then you told us to go vote? I think that's a little silly. But then the other thing is, okay, so I don't get it. I just don't get it. Like, I'm going to take my clothes off. The other thing is, I think maybe she's just looking for an excuse. Maybe she's just an exhibitionist, likes people to see her naked, and is just dressing it up as like a political message, like she's couching it. As if people need an excuse to get naked on the internet.
It's odd regardless. Yeah.
It's a little odd. It's a little odd. Most celebrity activism, though, like if you actually pay attention to it, like there's not a lot of meat on those bones when you hear a celebrity. I don't care if they're a left-wing celebrity. The left-wing people get all the A-list celebrities, right? They get like the Robert De Niro's and stuff. The conservatives get like the past their prime B and C list celebrities.
You get Clint Eastwood sometimes. Right. I like Clint Eastwood.
Okay. Clint Eastwood's the exception to the rule.
Okay.
Right. Clint Eastwood's still very much relevant, right, as a director. He's had a string of, in his later years, he's had a string of very good movies as an actor and director. So that's, That's good. Although, what was that movie he just directed where it had – I went to see it, and it was the American troops, and they're on a train, and they stop a terror attack. Why am I forgetting the name of this?
I don't – I remember seeing commercials, but never saw it.
So the conceit of that movie – well, I like Clint Eastwood movies generally. The conceit of that movie, though, is that they had the actual people who were involved in stopping – they played themselves. It was flippin' terrible. I mean, you can see now, this is why we have professional actors. Like, if you're going to be in a movie, just let an actor play you.
Yeah.
Don't try to do it yourself, because it was terrible.
I mean, it's a cool marketing gimmick, if nothing else, but...
Yeah. I mean, it got me in the door, I guess, but it was not good. But anyway, you're right. Clint Eastwood is the example of the sort of, like I would still consider Clint Eastwood to be an A-list celebrity. Right. He's still cranking out good movies.
Yep.
But, you know, conservatives generally get. But in general, like if you hear a celebrity, it's usually not even like the content, like the headline isn't like, you know, I don't know. Rosie O'Donnell makes super coherent argument for national health care. Like it's never that. It's always Rosie O'Donnell, like, you know, wants to chop Donald Trump's head off or something like that.
It's insulting.
Usually. It's just dumb. Yeah. Like, it's just trite. You could probably go to a middle school lunchroom and get more insightful political commentary than you could get out of most of these celebrities. It's just dumb. And the only reason we're paying attention is because they're famous. Like, they're gifted. Robert De Niro, gifted actor. I love Robert De Niro.
Wonderful actor.
I've watched pretty much every one of his movies that he's been in. Wonderful actor. If he's in a movie, I'm more likely to go see it. I think he's a wonderful actor. I think he sucks at political commentary. He's entitled to his opinion. I don't know why I should care about it. He's not that insightful, right?
He's not
but
a
yet
political
we all
expert.
We all obsess about
yeah.
it. I mean this is where we're at. We have a comedian and her message is I'm naked and I'm saying to go vote because I don't like Donald Trump. Like that's the message. Well, thank you, Chelsea Handler.
Good for you, I guess.
For taking your clothes off, I guess. Thanks. I don't know if that was for you or for us, but all right. Just a weird, weird world that we're living in. I don't know that social media has done us a lot of favors by giving everybody. I know this sounds horrible. Bill Clinton once said that the great thing about the First Amendment is that everybody gets a say, and the worst thing about the First Amendment is that everybody gets a say. And I kind of feel that way about social media. Right? I mean, I think it's great.
Oh,
I obviously use social media to reach, you know, broad groups of people. I like that it helps me keep up with my family and I can share pictures with my kids. I like all that stuff. I don't necessarily like that it gives every crank the idea that they're on their own little reality show. And, you know, I don't know if that's helpful or insightful or whatever.
I mean, we all have that one person who will just post anything and everything political. And no matter how inaccurate or like poorly thought out it is,
I think the reason why a lot of the celebrity messages are so dumb is I think most of them don't it's not that they're dumb, I just don't really know that a lot of them have anything to say, but they feel obligated to say something.
Well, it's bandwagoning. They see one person do it and then they do it and it gets them some publicity, and I think that's the main thing. Is just it's a way to get their name out there more.
Well, it just kind of becomes expected.
It's just
kind of expected. Right. It's expected. Mm-hmm. If you're a celebrity, then you're supposed to say, you know, Trump sucked. I was watching something. Ryan Reynolds had this. I don't know if you see that Ryan Reynolds put out on Twitter. I think Ryan Reynolds is hilarious. He did this fake campaign ad for Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman's in a new movie about Gary Hart that's coming out pretty soon. It looks good. It's a political nerd movie. I don't know how many people say it. I'm going to go see it because I'm a political nerd. But it's out. And so Ryan Reynolds, he made like this fake campaign ad. And he's like, you know, don't vote. You know, it was this negative ad, and it has like the scary political ad announcer, like, don't vote for Hugh Jackman. You don't want Hugh Jackman to be, you know. But part of the commercial was funny because he says it was something like, when it comes time to vote on the celebrity, you want delivering a liberal message at the next award show.
You're kidding.
And it was something like delivering an annoying liberal message at the next award show. I laughed at it because that's all the award show now are. You get up on stage, you accept your award, you call Donald Trump some names. Honestly, who's paying attention to this anymore? Who cares? Anyway, hey, we're going to take a break. We got a couple of congressional candidates in studio. Kelly Armstrong, who's running for North Dakota's at-large congressional district, and Tom Emmert, who's a candidate in Minnesota's 6th congressional district. They're on the show right now. Coming up next, here on 70 WDYAM 93.1 FM. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Port, 970 WDAYAM 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you. We got a couple of congressional candidates on the air now. We got one from North Dakota, one from Minnesota. Kelly Armstrong is currently a state senator, and is running for North Dakota's at-large seat in the United States House of Representatives, the one being vacated by its current occupant, Congressman Kevin Cramer. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. Thanks for having us on.
We also have Tom Emmert, who's a Republican congressman from Minnesota's 6th congressional district. Mr. Emmert, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob.
You fellows are out on the campaign trail, and we don't have that much long. What are you guys hearing? I mean, are there still a lot of people out there with their minds not made up yet, Kelly?
Yeah, we were going door to door in Fargo today, and you know, most people are getting galvanized. It's the 12 hours before the polls
galvanized.
Open.
Kelly, you got a hug.
Oh, I did get a hug at the roar, but we still met one person that wasn't quite sure how she was going to vote yet tomorrow. So we talked to her a bit, and hopefully, we persuaded her to vote our way. That's why we keep doing this all the way up until polls close.
Yeah. Well, I hope she only votes for one of you, because that would be problematic if she voted for both. Tom, in Minnesota, I mean, the people of the 6th district in Minnesota, how are they feeling? I mean, what's on their minds as we head? I mean, this is a pretty serious. I mean, we've seen what President Trump has done nationally. A lot of what he's done, I think it's fair to say, has been provocative. And I don't necessarily mean that as a pejorative. Dude shaking things up. How are people in the 6th district feeling about that?
Well, you got to remind them what what's happened, because unfortunately, as you know, Rob, the Twin Cities media market has been hit with some $35 million from outside funders. And they're running all these ads that contain all kinds of half-truths and mistruths and what some people say flat-out lies. So you got to go back out and you got to remind people in the cafes, in the local churches, everywhere that people congregate, you got to remind them, look, 2 years ago, before this administration and more importantly, this Republican Congress took office, this country was at 1.7% annual GDP, and we were told you were never going to have anything better than that again. Today, we're 4%, plus 4%. The Atlanta Fed is predicting over 5% first quarter of next year. We have 7 million open jobs in this country without people to fill them. You got real wages that are, frankly, rising for the first time in more than 10 years. You got to go out and remind them of all the good news. And then the other thing, Rob, people, you got to sit down with them and ask them, do you feel more safe in your community today than you did 2 years ago? Do you feel more safe in your country? Do you feel more safe around the world? The answers are clearly yes, but you got to remind them of that, because you're just getting this onslaught of, I call them shiny objects, distract the voters from the actual progress that has been made. And nobody wants to go back to, pre 4.0 growth, et cetera. People want to see this progress.
701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com if you have any comments or questions for the candidates. Kelly, one thing we've been hearing a lot about, as a matter of fact, there's a big piece in the New York Times today. It's about the trade issue. We talked about it a little bit. Congressman Cramer was on the show a little bit earlier. We talked with Eric Trump about it, about his father's policies earlier in the show. But talking with you about it as well, what are you hearing from people? I mean, the New York Times articles, you know, we got piles of soybeans sitting around. People are worried whether or not they're going to rot. I think there are people out there who are rightly concerned about this. People out there who are absolutely being impacted by this policy. I think it's the most talked about. You know, certainly when you and your opponent, Max Schneider, have been on my program, it's the issue we've talked about the most. How are with like you said, polls opening, what, about 12 hours away? How are people feeling about this?
Yeah, I think, first of all, when you talk about trade, you talk about China and then you talk about everybody else. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, there's been some really good things that have happened. I mean, we've got the new NAFTA, which has come through. A grain grading system alone makes this a win for North Dakota farmers with Canada. The Trump administration just announced E15. But China and soybeans is a big deal. And even as we open new markets up for our soybeans, we have transportation issues. We have to be able to move our beans to the Pacific Northwest, and we need to be able to move them. So we We've been talking to the administration all through this campaign. We'll continue talking to them starting November 7th, and we need to get real resolution. But it also sounds like they're going to meet at the G20 this month down in Argentina. Sounds like they're getting close to getting a petroleum deal done between the U.S. and China. And if those things start moving, I think we can see some progress moving very quickly.
Tom, agriculture obviously important to Minnesota as it is in North Dakota. How are Minnesotans feeling about this? Are they frustrated? Are they? I mean, and again, rural farm country America was Trump country. I mean, that I'm not going to say everybody there voted for President Trump, obviously, but in the aggregate, most of them did. How are people that you've been speaking to on the Minnesota side, how are they feeling about where we're at with this trade issue?
Well, you're right. Agriculture is one of the two primary drivers of Minnesota's private economy, manufacturing be the other one. So we're all about trade. We're a lot like North Dakota when it comes to that. You know, the farmers that I talk to, the manufacturers, I would say the farmers are concerned. Obviously, if you locked in your price at the beginning of the year, you're doing okay this year. If you didn't, you have even more concern. But they're standing with the president, Rob. They're patiently. In fact, I hear this more often than not. He's going to fix it. Okay, but their timeline is not long, and it's good that we've got a deal with Mexico. We got a deal with Canada. We have a deal with South Korea. It looks like Japan is on the horizon, and others are coming. Kind of what Kelly talked about with this meeting that's going to take place in Argentina. But it needs to keep moving. I would say the manufacturing side, and Kelly and I had a great visit today over at the Case plant here in Fargo, which, by the way, talk about big girl, big boy toys. It's one of the best examples you're going to find, those big Case tractors. Their inputs are up 40%. This is an issue because it get passed down. It get passed to the consumer, and you got consumers out there. It's not just the trade fight that's going on. You got these record low commodities prices, and you got farm families all across this country, not just in North Dakota and Minnesota, but all across the country that are struggling with low commodity prices and another year where family farm income is going to be down.
Kelly, let me tell you something that I'm worried about, because we trade is a substantive issue. That's what we should be talking about, trade policy, because it matters not just to agriculture, but to manufacturing, really to our entire economy. Healthcare, we should be talking about. Tax policy, we should be talking about. There's all sorts of policies we should be talking about. But here's what I'm afraid of, Kelly. If Democrats take control of even just the House, looking pretty good for Republicans in the Senate. House, it's a little touch and go. Most people seem to favor Democrats. If Democrats take control of the House, I worry that the national debate is going to be shifted away from what President Trump is doing on trade, on air, on taxes. And instead, we're going to be talking about relitigating the 2016 campaign, relitigating a lot of the stuff that the Democrats have been beating the drums on for a while. I worry that if Democrats take the House, we're going to be pulled away from the business of this country.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about it, and you don't have to go very far in the past to see it. Look at the first 2 days of the Kavanaugh hearing. That's all you have to do to look at it. I mean, and as soon as these are going on, and whether it's Maxine Waters or whoever is out there screaming, I mean, I think they're going to get, quite frankly, I think there's going to be a fight to get in the front of the line as to whether they're going to impeach President Trump or Justice Kavanaugh first. But that won't stop for us. We'll be continue to work with the administration. You know, the one nice thing about that part of it is, you know, the continued deregulation that the federal government's doing and this administration is doing, working out trade agreements. Those can be done in many, many ways independent of Congress. So we'll continue to work with this administration for pro-North Dakota policy.
Yeah, I would
Tom,
add,
Rob, in your, oh, well, sorry,
I just, I would just yeah. add to that. I don't mean to talk over you, but remember that the last Congress enacted trade promotion authority for the executive to negotiate these deals over a 7-year period. So it was the end of the Obama administration, and it will definitely cover the Trump administration. To Kelly's point, I think it's Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution gives the chief executive the authority to negotiate these deals. That's going to continue, and hopefully, I do worry, there is a major choice that's being made tomorrow. You've already had 34 million early votes across this country, and tomorrow, people are going to make that ultimate decision. If we do somehow lose our majority in the House, I do not see it happening in the Senate, but if it were to happen in the House, I just worry greatly about what it means to the progress that we've already made when you've got people like Nancy Pelosi saying she's going to undo the middle-class tax cuts that were passed almost a year ago.
Well, you know, Tom, that's what worries me, even about going back to the trade issue, for instance, I look at this as a situation, and Eric Trump was talking about this earlier in the program. I don't think President Trump wants to use trade tariffs. I think in a perfect world, we would just have free trade and goods and services would flow across the borders and everybody would prosper, and that would be wonderful. Unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world. Unfortunately, some of our trading partners are communist regimes that control their economies top to bottom, and it's difficult to have free trade with in an environment like that. And so I think what President Trump is trying to do is he's trying to use some of the weapons at his disposal in order to try to leverage better deals for our country. Now, in the short term, that's creating some turbulence. In the short term, it's creating some hardships. And I don't think anybody wants that. But to me, it's almost like, well, we got to eat our peas for a while in order to get to dessert, right? In order to get those better deals. And I worry that for the sake of political expediency, some of the rhetoric about trade and other things is undermining the president's ability. Because, I mean, you know China's watching the elections. You know China's watching a lot of the rhetoric out there. And you know that they like the idea that President Trump's being undermined, because I don't think they want him to be able. They want President Trump to blank. They want him to back down. Am I off base on that?
You're not off base at all. In fact, I think that the Chinese and anyone who has an advantage when it comes to the trade relationship with the United States, and you know, you talk about the top-down control. Why don't you just talk about how they subsidize businesses, how the government actually allows them to produce at below market cost to put American businesses and American workers out of business? That's what this is all about. And you got to believe that they would love to see the Democrats in the United States take control of the U.S. House, because they would probably believe this will give them an advantage in the negotiations. Remember, the president went to the G7 several months ago, sat down across from all the major leaders in the European Union and said, I'm ready to do a deal with any one of you or all of you today. You stop subsidizing your producers. We'll stop. We'll drop our tariffs. Let's have fair and reciprocal trade. And guess what, Rob? Nobody wanted to take the deal, because if you're producing a car in France and sending it to America, you pay 2-2.5%. If that same car is produced in America and sent to France, we're paying 10%. That's not fair, and that's what he's trying to resolve.
Listen, I think in some ways, I think we're the victims of our own success. I mean, America's got a roaring economy. We've got a wonderful workforce. We've got a great system of government. And overall, while they could certainly be improved relative to the rest of the nation, a free market economy that is conducive to prosperity. I wouldn't want, if I was France, I wouldn't want to compete with that either. And really what France ought to do is maybe change some of their laws so that they can better compete. But instead, I think they'd rather, you know, we play the political game with the trade policies and everything else. Kelly, you're a lawyer. What's your closing argument to North Dakota's voters?
My closing argument to North Dakota voters is the same thing it's been since we started this. We're proud of what we produce here. We are not a flyover state. We are an absolute economic powerhouse. And more in the U.S. House, more than anywhere else, we need somebody down there advocating for the issues of food security, energy security, and commodities, and the things that we grow and that we build and we produce here are not just good for North Dakota, they're good for the country and they're good for the whole world. And I'm excited to go to D.C. and advocate for those things every single day. Because if we can let North Dakota people be in charge of North Dakota destiny, we're going to be a lot better off, and so is the country.
Tom, same question for you.
Hey, what he said. And by the way, Minnesota loves our neighbor, North Dakota. You are an economic powerhouse. We like to celebrate our success, but this is the beauty of the Midwest region with Minnesota, the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa. We do lead the nation. And by the way, we also send some of the best politicians to Washington, D.C., which is why we're looking forward to seeing Kelly Armstrong in Congress starting next year. And all I'd say, Rob, is anybody who is still sitting out there and wondering what they should do tomorrow, get out and vote and get 10 other people to vote. If you like where this country's headed, if you feel more prosperous today and more opportunity for the future for you and your kids than you did 2 years ago, if you feel safer today than you did 2 years ago, it's time to make sure you stand up and be counted. So go vote for Kelly Armstrong and every other Republican on that ballot.
Well, I think you're right. I think a lot of those issues are of regional importance. I mean, what's good for Minnesota is good for North Dakota and vice versa 99.9% of the time. Gentlemen, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Kelly Armstrong, candidate for North Dakota's at-large congressional seat in the United States House, and Tom Emmer, who is running for re-election in Minnesota's 6th congressional district. This is the Rob Report. We'll wrap up the show right after this. Don't go away. 'Cause I don't care too much. Welcome back, Rapport 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM 701-293-9000 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. So tomorrow's the day. Well, not very much time left here, but tomorrow's the big day. And tomorrow we'll talk about all the predictions. We're going to run down the ballot. We'll do the statewide elections. We'll do the ballot measures. We'll even do, since the show broadcasts, we'll do the local ballot measures, right? The Cass County tax and the approval voting for Fargo. We'll do all of them. And your predictions. What do you think is going to be? I have thoughts on them. And I'm actually quoted, earlier in the program, I said it's a mistake to count Senator Heitkamp out. I'm actually quoted in a Fox News article today saying that exact point. The headline of the article was 5 Senate long shots who could surprise the midterm elections. Now, it's not a good sign that Senator Heitkamp's she's the incumbent. And she's being called a long shot. That's not a good place to start. But here's my argument. I quote from the article, but North Dakota political blogger Rob Port warns Heitkamp shouldn't be completely ruled out, citing multiple factors, including the possibility of complacency among Kramer supporters. He also noted Republicans, quote, have absolutely bungled the health care issue, and the lack of a farm bill could give fodder to Heitkamp's campaign. Heitkamp has two solid issues to batter Kramer with and a ton of money with which to tell that story. Meanwhile, Kramer is stuck trying to convince Republicans that the race isn't over yet while Heitkamp's base is energized, Port argued. A lot of people have written off this race, but that's a mistake. The question of who North Dakota's next senator is going to be is still very much in doubt. I stand by that. I think that race is still absolutely in doubt. We're not going to know. About 10 o'clock tomorrow night, I think we'll know for sure. And not before then. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. Hey, Jay Thomas Show straight ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned for Jay because Jay is awesome. You can catch me here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday on 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM, or, of course, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at sayanythingblog.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.